Dr. Dimitri is a different type of cosmetic surgeon. His heart is in the right place, educating his patients into what avenue they should take. You will hear his story. You will hear his vision and why he's the ultimate outlier.
Welcome to Outliers TV. Welcome to Outliers TV. Welcome to Outliers TV. Welcome to the show. Yeah. With Jorge.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Outliers TV, a podcast about innovators changing our world. And today we have the incredible pleasure of being with Dr. Dimitri, cosmetic surgeon. How are you doing, doctor?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So you are in Beverly Hills, and now you're going back home to take over Tampa.
Yeah, that's right. I'm originally from the Tampa Bay area, and I've always wanted to have a practice there as well. So I've got the best of both worlds here. In Beverly Hills, the mecca for plastic surgery, and then back home, kind of close to family as well.
You look pretty young, dude. How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 33.
Nice, age of Christ. A lot of things happen in 33. Yeah. Do you remember the first time you were called doctor?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I was a senior in high school, and my girlfriend at the time, her father was a surgeon, and I went to hang out with him and shadow him, and we were in the surgeon's area waiting for the next procedure to start, and he kind of snuck out, and I was drinking coffee or something, and overhead he had one of the nurses page Dr. Dimitri Arnotakis to room 2, Dr. Dimitri Arnotakis to room 2, and I, you know, and I'll never forget that, because it was, you know, cool feeling. I was only 17 at the time, so.
But that was a sign.
Yeah.
That's all you needed. Awesome. So, Dr. Dimitri, thanks for being with us today. And before we start every episode, I'd like to start you out with a question, and there's no right or wrong answers, whatever speaks to you. Okay. And the question is, why you, why now?
Why me, why now? Well, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, I feel like things have really been coming together for me lately, really. With the two offices coming together, and I'm very busy here in Beverly Hills, seeing a wide range of patients from, you know, males, females, young, old, for surgeries and injections and hair transplants. So I feel like I have, experience to weigh in on these matters, and I'm excited to share my thoughts and get some feedback from people listening from around the country.
Amazing. Awesome. Awesome. So, you know, we've had a plastic surgeon here in the past, and it fascinates me, right? Because obviously we live in LA and in Hollywood, and the face of plastic surgery, no pun intended, is changing. How do you see the whole industry evolving?
So, you know, one of the things I want to convey to people is that it doesn't have to be done, you know, drastically, the procedures. Mm-hmm. I always try to tell people I'm conservative, less is more. You know, you can come back in 3 weeks and we can do a touch up versus overdoing it up front. And then sometimes, you know, patients look distorted. So I hope that we are evolving towards a more elegant look with the procedures that we do. Also, technology is fascinating. I mean, there's so many, you know, non-surgical options out there now for skin tightening and you know, getting rid of fat. And it's just, it's a really fun time to be in the field of cosmetic surgery.
And what is your specialty? What part within that arena do you do the most, and do you enjoy doing the most?
Yeah, so I exclusively focus on facial plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. So I don't do breast or body work. I'm really passionate about rhinoplasty, nose jobs, facelifts, eyelid surgery, and a lot of injections, whether it's Botox or fillers or contouring the face. And then finally, hair transplantation, which we see probably more common in males, but it also can apply to females as well.
Yeah. Well, I hope I don't get there. But, do you believe, have you heard that whole theory about it's always your mom's father's? You have to look at your mom's father. Is there any truth to that?
No. So it's, no, it applies.
You're like,
you
no.
You have to be very, when you're taking a history on a patient, you have to be very thorough and ask about all their relatives, both maternal and paternal, and siblings, and that really can give you a good indication of what to expect for that patient as they.
So that's a bit of an urban legend, not really true. Okay. Awesome. So I know that you've become an expert in your own right about the whole demographic of younger patients, right? Like, especially, you know, we would love your opinions on teens plastic surgery, right? Because I think that's such an interesting topic. What are your thoughts on teens getting plastic surgery?
So when a younger patient comes in, you really want to steer them in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And so especially for a teenager, I mean, their bodies are continuing to change. They're still maturing and aging. And so you don't really ever want to dive into anything too soon. Now, of course, you know, we'll see kids are sometimes born with big ears, right? And what we can do for them is actually pin them back. And you'll want to perform that around the age of 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, that one needs to be done early.
So
right.
That's done before they actually start school. So, you know, they don't get teased and they don't have confidence issues and other, you know, psychological issues. So that's you know, something actually that we do at a younger age. But if you're, you know, referring to a nose job or something like that, you know, especially for a female, we don't want to do it when they're 12 or 13 because they're still going through their menstrual cycle then and their bodies are still changing. So at least when it comes to that, we tell a female to wait a couple years till after they've started their menses. It can get really complicated, mm-hmm. too, with if you're going into body work about breast augmentations and stuff like that. You know, you really, really want to be cautious when you're dealing with a younger patient population.
You know, I was actually having this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine that we have another mutual friend that, you know, he's had some work done and you know, and then we started talking about, let's say, you know, someone like Kylie Jenner, right? Who clearly in the public eye, it's in it's public knowledge, right? That, she's done all these fillers and it's interesting because it's created a career for her. I mean, talk about someone that was born with thin lips and now owns the market in lipstick because of filler. So, I mean, you can't say that the fillers
she created a career for herself and for me as well. And
all of you. So my question to you is, and this is what I was talking to my friend about yesterday, like what are the repercussions that could possibly happen to somebody? I mean, is a situation like that something that the person's going to have to keep doing or else the face goes back or what happens?
No, that's not necessarily true. So the one thing about the fillers, and at least the ones that I use in my practice, they're called hyaluronic acid fillers. So it's mm-hmm. something we're injecting into the lips or elsewhere in the face that we actually already have underneath our skin. Mm-hmm. So that part, if it's done, you know, by an experienced injector, it's very, by and large, very safe. You have to be experienced and knowledgeable about facial anatomy, of course, but you know, if it's done properly, it can look good, and you know, it doesn't have to be a drastic change. Now, of course, you know, she has had a big transformation from, you know, when she was younger to what her image mm-hmm. is now, and you know, part of the, you know, the celebrities and they're open about their procedures. That's a large part why it's becoming more common for teenagers and younger people to want to do these procedures.
Yeah. It fascinates me. There's a big, social media star. Her name is Lele Pons. And I remember she's very public about her nose job. And, mm-hmm. and I remember I was going through her story once and it said, "Hey, for you guys that have wondered who did my nose, it was Dr. Whatever." And you know, we've definitely come a long way as a culture mm-hmm. in the conversation of surgery, right?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be, you know, in the 90s, even before, kind of taboo mm-hmm. to be open about your plastic surgery. And now you'll see influencers and celebrities and, you know, models, you know, promoting a plastic surgeon, you know, saying that I only trust this doctor, you know, he or she with my face. And younger people are, you know, they're influenced by it. They feel like they trust that person. If they went to Dr. X or Dr. Dimitri, then I'm going to go there too. And, you know, we didn't have these platforms back then too. Mm. You know, there wasn't Instagram and YouTube and, you know, even the internet at some point. And, so now it's all this stuff is kind of more in your face. You know, it's more open. It's not necessarily as taboo.
Yeah. I think by default, the younger generation just grew up just documenting their lives, you know? So I think at some point it's like, you know, where I can try to, I guess, edit or customize what people see, uh-huh. but there's so many cameras and at some point you're just like, whatever.
I mean, I'm truthfully grateful for the kind of time period that I grew up in because you're right. It's like, you know, they feel like they have to film every second of their life, or, you know, put it out there that they're on the subway going to work, or they're tweeting about, you know, this and that. And it's just like, at some point you got to enjoy your life, you know, and live in the moment.
What's your social media habit of choice?
So my account is Dr. Dimitri. It's pretty easy. And, I have a marketing company that helps me with, some stuff, but truthfully, I like to do a lot of it myself. I respond to all of the comments I get and messages I get personally. And we post like 3 times a week on average. And it's mostly like before and afters or surgical videos or sometimes some personal pictures with me and my cute nieces and my nephew. But and then we do some, you know, story posts as well. So I support my friends and my patients who support me, and I'm grateful for that. And it is a good platform. I mean, it's fun. You know, it's I tell people it's kind of a modern day website, you know, for a patient who's interested. They really honestly probably go to your Instagram first before they even go to your website. And that wasn't the case, you know, 5-10 years ago.
So you've gotten work from people. Oh, yeah.
A large part of my patient referrals come through Instagram.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Yeah, but for, you know, myself as well, it's such a work tool that never existed before.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back on obviously, you know, teenagers are looking at people like Kylie or so many people in the public eye. Do you find yourself saying no a lot?
Yes, for sure. If someone comes in with unrealistic expectations, you know, I don't know how many times a week someone brings in a picture of Bella Hadid and they're like, you know, make me look like her. I mean, you know, that's obviously not realistic. And so you need to kind of draw them back to reality. And sometimes they're fixated on a facial feature that, you know, really isn't perhaps that distorted or abnormal, but there's something else, and you can maybe, you know, draw them to something that would help them and would enhance their facial features.
Yeah, that's what I actually wanted to ask you. Yeah. Sometimes it seems like it's a Russian roulette. There's a Russian roulette aspect to it as well, right? Like I think Bella made out. She killed it, you know?
Yeah.
But isn't there a chance that it could not go that way?
I mean, of course, anytime we do a procedure, there's always risks, whether it's something simple as
it just doesn't heal the way that
even if you're doing just an injection or if it's a surgery. I mean, you know, for example, rhinoplasty, it's very nuanced, it's very technically challenging, and you know, you do your best job every time, of course, but you know, you can't really control everything, how the patients heal, and so plays a role into it as well.
Yeah, I see with friends of mine, and I, you know, and that when it works great, it works great, you know, because it kind of, you know, people get so attached to like a certain defect that they have per se, and then you finally get it sorted out, and it's like, oh, such a breath of fresh air, right?
Yeah, and the other thing too, we see a lot in plastic surgery is something called body dysmorphic disorder. So that's where a patient or someone is fixated on a feature of theirs, but it's not really, you know, out of the ordinary or that abnormal. And they perseverate on, you know, their nose being too big, too small, but in reality it's not. And so those patients really, you actually want to avoid doing any procedures on, because if anything, it'll just make their situation worse.
Right. Yeah, I can totally see that. So let's go back a little bit about growing up. Tell me about your growing up situation, doctor.
So I'm actually the youngest of 3 boys, and my oldest brother is a heart surgeon, and my other brother is a vascular surgeon. So in my family, I'm here doing aesthetics, and you know, they joke that they're the real doctors. I'm out here doing this, but and you know, truthfully, they're saving people's lives, and I love them for what they do. It's great. I'm very passionate about plastic surgery and aesthetics, and I think that what we do, we're, you know, improving people's lives and restoring confidence maybe in an area where they weren't confident before.
Do you remember a singular moment that made you want to go that route? Or
so when I was working at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and I was doing like head and neck cancer reconstruction research there. And I'll never forget one of the plastic surgeons there. He's world renowned. He had a patient who unfortunately had cancer of her ear. And so the doctors had to remove her ear. And what they had done was they harvested her rib cartilage. They molded it into the shape of her ear, the normal ear. They implanted it in her forearm, let skin grow around it. And then with microvascular techniques, they transplanted it to where the ear had been removed and pretty much gave her a new ear. And I remember just being fascinated by the whole story, and I was you know, there for the whole thing. And I remember I was driving back from Baltimore to Florida, and I heard the story on NPR, and it kind of got, you know, goosebumps, because I was like, well, I know, you know, all about that. And then I was in Dallas and kind of got more involved with aesthetics, and then kind of here I am. But it's a great field. There's the facial plastic and reconstructive surgery, and so it's a broad spectrum, and you know, both sides of it are really fun and rewarding.
So they make a fake ear.
They gave out of her own rib cartilage. I mean, there's sometimes you can have prosthetics and stuff like that, but yeah, it was really fascinating and just, you know, rewarding to be a part of that.
Wow, that's so incredible. Yeah. You know, it still amazes to me how we're, you know, trauma, you know, as far as like, you know, the kind of bullying and just looking different makes such a huge impact on how our lives unfold, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. and when what a gift that technology has come this far to create systems and structures where a lot of pain can be solved, right?
Yeah, for sure. And even with, you know, with trauma, as you mentioned, and what we have now with cancer reconstruction, you know, sometimes if someone really aggressively smokes and drinks, they can get cancer in their mouth or of their jaw. And if that happens, sometimes we have to remove the bone there. And so now with advanced techniques, we can actually take their fibula, which is your part of your leg bone, mm-hmm. and then use that to reconstruct the mandible or the jaw. And, you know, those are several hour surgeries, and you're doing surgery under a microscope, connecting blood vessels together. And it's, you know, fascinating. And, you know, a year down the road, sometimes it's hard to tell that the patient even had surgery.
Wow, wow. What is one thing that you want people to keep in mind or think about before they have plastic surgery?
So first off, you should definitely do your research. You know, visit the doctor's Instagram, like we talked about, their mm-hmm. website, look up their credentials, where they went to school and trained. You know, that stuff's important. Make sure, you know, you read their reviews. And I think in this field, the most, regardless of how much money doctors spend on marketing or whatever, the most powerful tool will be always be word of mouth. So, you know, if I did a procedure on someone and it turned out great, then, you know, that patient's likely to tell her friends or her someone close to her that, you know, I went to this doctor and he did a great job. And so, you know, trying to find someone who's visited that physician before is always helpful. But, you know, just be knowledgeable about who you're going to see and what you're doing, and be realistic with your goals too, about what you're trying to get out of from the procedure.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And where do you see your career unfolding and evolving? I mean, you're a young guy, you're 33, and tell us a little bit, then I want you to go into what you want to do in Tampa and how you're growing your business there as well.
I mean, I love staying busy. I mean, when I'm here, I have, you know, 20 patients a day coming in for whether it's an injection or consults or follow-ups. And, I just, you know, they say that devil finds time for idle hands. And so
you gotta stay busy.
I love staying busy. And I'm, you know, the way my brothers and I were naturally hard workers. And so I love being clinically busy and interacting with patients. I think mm-hmm. that's fun. There's some other projects that I think are upcoming, and that would be, you know, sort of spinoffs from the clinical side of things, and hopefully, you know, be able to have a bigger platform to educate patients out there and potential patients.
Do you see yourself like on a show, like the doctors? Because you got the looks for it. You're young.
That's why I have here our PR team and trying to, you know,
these crows are the best.
Yeah.
They have the best guests and they're awesome.
I agree. I'm grateful to be a part of that team. But, there's hopefully some big things coming up, and, I really just want to do my best to bring the Beverly Hills experience to Tampa, Florida. And we built a beautiful office there and designed it similar to what we have here, and it's growing quickly. And, you know, for now, like you said, I'm young. It's easy for me to kind of go back and forth from one coast to the other. And, it's exciting, to be honest.
Yeah. Cause it seems like, you know, in this new world of ours, like there's just so much content and competition, right? And it's like, going back to kind of like this whole social media and the YouTube and stuff, it's actually so awesome that, you know, you can choose whatever you want as entertainment. Like, mm-hmm. if you want to, you know, the other day my friend was telling me, oh, you should get into intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. And she's like, here's a couple of YouTube videos. And there are these great doctors yeah. on YouTube that are just like, hey, I've been doing intermittent fasting for about mm-hmm. 2 months and these are the results. If you like what you see, subscribe. Yeah. So it's such an exciting time where professionals can be entertainers, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if you've got the right look and the right message and you're willing to put yourself out there, you could create a brand for yourself, right?
Yeah, for sure. So especially with YouTube now, I think, for a lot of doctors and surgeons, they're even posting some of the procedures that they,
what are your thoughts on that?
And I think if it's done well, and if it's,
if you get their permission, of course.
Number one, you always need the patient's permission to do that. But I think it can be a good tool to educate, patients on what to expect. And that it doesn't necessarily have to be a scary procedure. You know, we have a huge staff with the doctors and the anesthesiologist and the nurses and then our practice managers. And, you know, there's someone there every step of the way to guide someone through this process because it can be scary. But, I think with the advent of YouTube and the other social media platforms, it can kind of take away a lot of the mystery from these things. So, you know, when patients come in the door, they're like, oh, I saw your video, and, you know, they know what to expect a little bit.
Yeah, I have another friend of mine who's a doctor, and he would put these IG stories and videos of, you know, the female patient in the middle of like breast reduction or whatever. He's like, and this is how you slide. And I'm like, dude, you like, I text him and I was like, this is really intense. He's like, you know, my marketing team and I think that it's actually and I'm like, hey, who knows, right?
Yeah.
But definitely demystifying the thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we should always give kind of a heads up or like a warning, you know, next slide or next post is graphic. That would be obviously considerate for people who, you know, may not want to watch it, of course. But yeah, overall, I think if it's done professionally and it's educational, then, you know, it's only a win for the doctors to kind of show what they're doing and for the patients to know what to expect.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, that there's so much more value in that than just me squirming when I see some blood on Instagram. Do you see yourself owning and growing more practice, more offices and?
Is
that one of the goals, doctor?
I do have kind of an entrepreneur side. I'm always, you know, learning and interested in other opportunities, potentially with collaborating with the med spa, even in Dallas, Texas, and in Tampa, Florida as well. And so those are fun. You know, there's so many parts to aesthetic medicine, you know, like we mentioned with all the new technology, you can go, we have something across the street in our med spa, our laser center called the M-Sculpt. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the equivalent of doing 30,000 crunches in 30 minutes.
What do they do?
So it's a machine that actually it's FDA approved for your abdomen or your buttocks. Mm-hmm. And the machine stimulates your muscles at like very, very high stimulation that you couldn't just get by doing a normal setup. And we usually recommend two treatments in 1 week and then two treatments the next week. And
great results,
and you'll see good results. And sometimes we combine it with like cool sculpting, which is of course what people refer to as fat freezing, and together you can see a really good result. So, anyways, there's just a lot of interesting and innovative technologies out there, and it's fun to be a part of that.
No, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how many it seems more. Do you think eventually technology will? There will be no need for, let's say, surgeries. Do you think more procedures will kind of take over in the future? I mean, by that, I mean non-surgical.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a trend towards non-invasive and non-surgical. You know, people don't want downtime. They don't want to have scars. And, you know, there's always the desire for that. That's why a lot of these companies are coming out with, quote-unquote, non-surgical facelifts and stuff. But they've been trying to do this for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years.
Like, nothing's more effective than that knife.
And that's seriously the truth. I mean, a facelift is always going to give you the best result for someone who has an aging face. If it's, and someone's nose is crooked and their tip is droopy and they've got a hump, I mean, they need a nose job. You can try to inject as much stuff as you want, but it's never going to look as elegant and as good as if you just did the surgery.
Yeah, no. I have a friend that, I didn't even know this thing existed until the other day. He was telling me, so it's like these fillers that they do, but they're temporary. And then after 6 months, it goes down.
That's right. I think I did 3 or 4 of those procedures yesterday where it's best. It's good for someone. I guess
it's good to give you an idea of how you could look, right?
Exactly. And so it's a quick office procedure. It takes 10-15 minutes. You see the result right away too. It's immediate. You can see the change in the profile. So if someone has a little bump on their nose and they just want it to be straighter, then that's actually a good option. And there's virtually no downtime. And you're right. It lasts maybe 9 months, 12, 15 months, which is a pretty decent length of time before they need to repeat it. And God forbid they didn't like it with the kind of fillers that we use in our office, you could dissolve it and reverse it. So it's nice to kind of have that in the back of your mind. Of course, we rarely do that, but it's an option for the patients.
Right, just to kind of test it out. Take it for a test drive. Enjoy it for 6 months and then watch it fall down. Going back on to kind of wrap things up with the conversation about teen surgery, which I think it's so incredible that that's something that you're very knowledgeable about and you want to really take a stand on educating the culture. What would you tell a parent who has a child that is really disliking something about themselves and is contemplating on any kind of plastic surgery?
So I would counsel the parent to, of course, as I'm not a parent, but I'm an uncle and I adore my nieces and my nephew, that you want to make sure you listen to them, because if they feel like no one sees what they see or they don't feel supported through the process, then they may actually, do something rash. Mm-hmm. So you certainly need to, hear them out and be there for them. And there's nothing wrong with taking your child in to go see a physician and then they can give them their professional opinion. And if they need to see whether it's the surgeon or a psychologist or someone to kind of counsel them about their issues, that is also, I think, a good step. And so just making sure that they're supportive and also tell them that, maybe they will need a procedure, but there's a right time for that. Maybe they need to grow into their bodies a little bit more. And there was actually a study done, I think it was out of Denmark, and it showed that actually as people age, they actually become more comfortable with their bodies without having plastic surgery. So it's just really a matter of growing up and kind of growing into yourself.
Yeah, and kind of buckling down.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder sometimes because, those things, and obviously there's such a movement against anti-bullying, but I think we can all kind of now, I'm a little older than you, but as we get older, we realize that bullying had a powerful side effect also, which is almost it made us kind of tolerant, resilient. And now you can have empathy to somebody that's bullied, where maybe if you wouldn't have been bullied, you'd be like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Uh-huh. Sometimes I wonder if the right approach is just to kind of give that perspective conversation.
And the other thing too, just with how our society has evolved, people want a quick fix for things.
And that's the thing.
And that's also how I think, plastic surgery comes into this, where if a 14-year-old girl, she's unhappy with her appearance or she wants bigger breasts or what it is, she thinks, she can snap her fingers and get it just because, she can go on to YouTube or she can go online and order something and it comes right away. That's, it's not always the case. We need to be patient with things and just, along the lines of bullying. I mean, when you're young, we say stupid things and it's important to try to, educate our teenagers and young people to treat people with respect and dignity. And, unfortunately it doesn't always happen, but That's the message we need to spread more, I think, than, you know, trying to be disrespectful towards others.
Yeah. Patients need to be patient. That's the message today. Doctor, how can we find you?
Well, I'm on Instagram. It's Dr. Dmitri, D-R, and then my Dmitri, D-E-M-E-T-R-I, and my website is www.drdmitrimd.com. I'm happy to answer any questions from people if you reach out on my website or Instagram, and just let me know what you think.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And before I let you go, I want to acknowledge you on behalf of Outliers TV, myself and the world. I acknowledge you for being a beacon of education and for truly wanting to make a difference in people's lives, not just on the exterior, but clearly on the interior. And we wish you all the luck and thank you for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a great time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening in. And of course, we want to acknowledge you, the incredible listener. Don't forget to subscribe. Namaste.